Welcome to the Project Love podcast. I'm Selena Barker.
And I'm Vicky Pavitt. In these podcasts, we explore what it takes to create a life, relationship, and career you love.
And not just one that looks good on the outside, but one that feels good on the inside.
So, I interviewed the gorgeous Pandora Paloma this week. She's an intuitive living coach, founder of Rooted Living, and author of her brand new book, Intuitive Living, 6 weeks to Self-Love, Intuitive Eating, and Reclaiming Your Mind-Body Connection. And first of all, it's a really good book. It's amazing. I got to read, even before the actual copies came out, a PDF part of it, and it's just so wise, so smart, so loving. Whether you're interested in intuitive eating or intuitive living, I think it is an absolutely brilliant book. We also get a name check in it, Vicky, so...
Yeah.
When she's talking about shitty committee,
I cannot wait to read it. So we went to her book launch party the other week, and I bought the book, and I cannot wait to start. I'm going to do the 6 week program through the book. I can't wait.
So listening to the podcast though, had quite an effect on you, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It's already had a positive effect on me. I listened to it yesterday, and this morning I started to just feel more mindful of what I was choosing to eat and how I was eating as well, and what state of mind I'm in. You know, this morning when I sat down to eat my breakfast, I was really tuning into how I felt and just taking a bit more time to eat. So already it's having a positive impact, which is pretty amazing from listening to one conversation.
Well, I share in the episode that it had a real impact on me just reading a couple of chapters from the book, and the very next day I was like owning my space and like really showing up and not being unapologetically angry and communicating my anger. And I was like, oh my god, that was literally moments after I'd read that part in your book. So yeah, she's such a wise woman. She's so gorgeous. And I think it's, we talked about intuitive living, how to tap into your intuition, and how important it is to like yourself to be able to do that, and the link with that. We did, of course, talk about intuitive eating. And really interestingly, we talked about her take on body love versus body neutrality, and how she's leaning towards body neutrality more these days. So it's a good, juicy conversation.
Yeah.
Pandora, I just have to start this by saying what a phenomenal book this is. And I really mean it. And apparently you told me just before you hit record that I'm the first person to give any feedback on it.
Yeah, other than my editor and my agent. Yeah, you are.
I really, really mean that. So literally within reading the first couple of pages, I was like, oh God, this is so good. The way you write, it's so loving, it's so wise, it's so smart. Like, obviously, this is, you know, the world of life coaching and empowering people and tools and techniques is something that I've been in for a long time. So when I see a book like yours that has such smart tools, and like your journaling prompts aren't just the usual run-of-the-mill journaling prompts, even just reading, I was like, oh, that is such a good question.
Oh,
like, just
you.
Reading it took me somewhere. Are you excited about the world getting its hands on it and reading it?
Yeah, I am. I really am. So the basis of the book was a 6 week program that I offer as a group program. And when we originally had conversation, when I had the original conversation with my agent, I wanted to do sort of an intuitive eating cookbook in a way, because you know my background was in sort of catering and stuff. And she said, "Tell me about this 6 week program." And I was like, well, it's this. And she was like, that's the book. This is the book. So I'd already sort of been taking people on this journey. And I think the biggest challenge, I suppose, was putting it into a book format. Because obviously me sort of going off on one on a video, you know, on a group video is one thing. But actually putting it down on paper was something else. So, yeah, it's weird. It's daunting. It's exciting and a bit scary. But... I think I'm really stepping into what I would call, if I was talking to a client, you know, my feminine force, my power. And it's really sort of showing who I am to the world. And so, of course, there's an element of like, oh God, you know, what are people going to think? But equally, you know, for every one person that it really touches and helps transform, then, that's the impact that I was looking for. So.
Oh, it definitely will.
how would you love the book to help people transform? What kind of transformation is it aimed at helping people make in their lives?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of noise out there now. Remember that I originally trained in straight up nutrition. So you come to me with endocrine problems or digestive issues,
yeah,
and I will know what advice to support you, you know, to give to you to support you. And what I found was that there was so much emotional connection to food, and which is how I sort of developed into the intuitive eating arena, really. And then it just got deeper and deeper and deeper. And I was like, it's so much about the living, and how we yeah. live transforms our relationship with food. Because if we are living with authenticity and purpose, and as I call it, your power, then you use food so much less as a coping mechanism.
Mm.
And this book is really to sort of stand up and say to women, you are so much more than your body.
Mm.
And that there is so much noise out there, but everything that you need to know is already within you, which is why it's called intuitive living. It's yeah. about engaging with that sixth sense. You know, what do you need to know today? It's already within you. Mm. It's already within you. So, that is who it is for, someone who feels that there's just so much noise.
Yeah.
They're done with the diets. They're done with the fads. But equally, they want to live in a way that feels purposeful and exciting and, you know, rich in satisfaction.
Mm.
So it's, you know, taking everything in, every single element. And, you know, I've just recently launched an intuitive business program, and a lot of people were, why business? And I'm like, because it's all interlinked.
Yeah.
How you do business will affect how you're living. How you're living will affect how you're eating will affect your business. You know, you can't just work on one thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's everything is in the mix. It's this big pot. And that's really where this whole idea of intuitive living is sort of stems from.
It's so good. And I know so a lot of it is about intuitive eating, and that's kind of the sort of foundation
yeah.
of your work. But that's ditching the diet and that stuff, that's not necessarily something that I'm out there looking for. And yet this book, I was just like, it just promised to make me feel good and reconnect with myself. And yeah. it's, you know, it talks obviously about self-love and working with the inner critic, and we get a mention,
you
don't
do.
We? I'm yeah. so excited.
But for me, I think self-love is the basis of, it's the basis of all of my work.
Yeah.
You know, I just did the first video in my intuitive business group coaching program, and week one is self-love. How you look after yourself is going to affect every other aspect of your life, from your relationship to your relationship with your children to
yeah.
how you do business. You know, it's so important that we look after ourselves and really know what that means to us, what that looks like. And then of course the inner critic came in. So I sort of wanted to, the third chapter is actually about the intuition, but before that we have self-love, and then we have getting rid of the inner critic, because
yeah.
it's only when you do those things that I think you can really then connect with your intuition. Then we yeah. go into food, then we go into finding satisfaction, which is very much about the living aspect. And then the sixth chapter is make your own rules. So it's like, now that you've learned all of this, who do you want to be and how do you want to live? Go make those rules, go live that life, you know? So it's a real journey. And it's something that feels very personal to me, because it's almost like how I changed my life and my yeah. eating patterns was from, you know, in this, exactly in this way, like finding about who I was and looking after myself, and then, you know, get really thinking about my inner critic and the way that I was thinking about things, and then tapping into it. So it's a good journey.
It's a great journey. And it's interesting, actually, I asked you before we hit record who you'd written this for, who you thought you were really writing this for, and you said, well, yourself.
Yeah,
you from the
many
past.
Years ago. Yeah.
yeah,
I was really judgmental of women who I thought looked better than me, or were thinner than me, or, you know, I always thought there was something wrong with me. I must have a thyroid problem, you know, rather just saying, this is my body. I'm going to just be, make it my BFF. I'm going to look after it. So it's a real transition. And also, you know, I did really write it for my daughter as well. I was saying before, I think I got the book deal in February. Romilly was born in March, and my deadline was September. So
I
it was like,
believe
wow, okay.
It
you know, it's constantly, I remember like sort of being in the bath with Romilly, my daughter, and shouting down to Tom, my partner, like, can you quickly write this down? But I've just had this like great thought for like a piece of the chapter, a couple of sentences. And, you know, it was just scribbling notes and scribbling notes and then bringing it all together. So,
Oh yeah. My God. I mean, it's amazing you did that as a new mum, first time new mum. Phenomenal. That, yeah. The fact that you had the brain power to do it, it's just, and also such calmness with it. It's just, I love the way it's written.
Oh, thank you. I really love
the way it's written. It just feels like a wise, warm hug that's just going to get you back on the right track or on the right track to start with.
Yeah.
It's intuition is such an interesting topic. It's so interesting that you say that you start people off with like dealing with the inner critic and self-love and then getting into intuition. I was listening to an interview with, what's her name? Pinkola Estes, who wrote
Women Who Run With Wolves,
who was talking with Caroline Miss, who's this medical savant or something like that. So hugely intuitive women who've written bestsellers on being intuitive women. And Caroline Miss said, people always ask me, what is it? How do you become really in touch with the intuition? And she said, my grandma taught me this. You have to like yourself. That's it. You just like yourself. The end. There's nothing more. There's nothing mystical, nothing mythical. Yeah. You just have to like yourself. And then you'll tap into your intuition, which sounds like exactly what you're saying. Yeah. I'd love to hear a little bit more about that, because I think I'm a very intuitive person. But when people say to me, like, how do you get in touch with that? I'm just like, I just repeat that same story I just told you. I was like, you like yourself? I don't know. So yeah. How do you describe it to people, take people on that journey?
It's funny. I was chatting to a friend about this exactly this weekend. And I was explaining to her, you know, the more that you know yourself, this is why I work in self-development. The more that you get to know yourself, the more readily available, the easier you will be able to communicate with the world. And when you get to know yourself and you accept these parts of yourself, whether that's your body or the fact that you're a bit, you know, controlling and have, you know, OCD, whatever it is, you can really sit in who you are. And that sense of knowing allows you to feel more deeply, I believe. So when you really know and accept yourself, you can just really sit in what feels right to you.
Yeah.
And a way that I do this sometimes with the clients is a tool that I use called judgment journaling. So if you were brought up and, you know, you were always told that you were really, you weren't very creative. Weren't creative. And, you know, you live with that for your whole life. I'm not very creative. And you see it as a negative because it was told to you as a negative. So this is an imprint, right? Actually, what does not being creative, what's the flip side of that? What's the positive? If that's an unwholesome statement, what's the wholesome part of that? Well, actually, I'm really logical, or I'm really interested in this aspect of life. So we sort of have these qualities that society has given us that are either deemed good or bad. But actually, there's always a different aspect to it. If you're always late, then that's okay that you're always late. But actually, you know, the positive of that may be something else. But we, again, I'm so into this idea of just these labels that society gives us, whether that's, you know, fat, thin, good, bad, creative, not creative. And actually, we kind of have to really just accept all of these different parts of us. You know, I am probably a bit controlling, but I keep a lovely home. And the candles are always in the right place, which, you know, at the end of the day, really, I really enjoy about my life.
I think I'd quite like to live with a person that was that controlling, that it reflected in such a lovely way on our home.
Exactly, you know, and it's
my controllingness doesn't, unfortunately, translate into that at all. Oh, I wish the two went hand in hand all the time.
Yeah. But there's so many positives to even these, you know, negative qualities, as it were. But the point is, I think when you know and accept all of these different parts of yourself, and you can be just really true and honest about who you are, you just have a sense of knowing of what is right or wrong.
Yeah. And you can just ask yourself and the answer will come.
You strip away the layers. Yeah. So these layers that kind of have been placed on you of you're this kind of person, you're that kind of person, you're fat, you're thin, you're, you know, whatever it is, And actually, when you peel away those layers and you're like, I just am who I am, you can communicate so much better to yourself. And when you communicate better, you communicate better to other people. You know, that inner sense of knowing who you are allows you to have an inner sense of knowing of what feels good, what is the right choice. And it is a really difficult thing to explain.
Yeah.
And I do get challenged with it. So, certainly with making bigger decisions, for example, with my partner, you know, do we buy a house here? Do we move here? I just tend to know.
Yeah.
And so that it can be difficult to explain that, you know, it is a sense of knowing. It's why intuition is a difficult thing to research, because, you know, how you interpret your intuition will be very different to me. But yeah, I love that, you know, like yourself. Yeah. The self-love comes first.
Yeah. That's the foundation. And you write about self-love in such a wonderful way. It's really, and you know, I know the topic quite well. And I just, yeah, it's just beautifully written. I haven't managed to read the whole way through the book, I will admit. But I did take some notes as I was going.
Lovely.
I think these are even possibly some of them about your own story. I was together on the outside while controlling, critical and harsh on the inside. I was like, everyone knows that.
Yeah.
Like, that must resonate with everyone. And real health has to start with your life, trusting in your body and mastering your mindset. I was like, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, all of that.
Yeah.
So mastering your mindset, obviously elements of that, a lot of that in the book. What are the key things, sort of mindset mastery, that you help people with in the book?
So it's really about tapping into who you are, like I've just said, you know, getting rid of a lot of those labels, or just accepting that that is part of who you are. But really stepping into the kind of person that you want to be.
Mm.
You know, if you're constantly berating your body, then I guarantee that's not how you want to be feeling. So you might not be able to change your body, but you can change the mindset around your body. So you can change how you think about your body. And that's what the changing of the mindset is about. So, you know, limiting beliefs, you can change how you think about that. You know, and again, it comes to the labels, right? I'm not a very confident person. No, it's just that you think you're not a confident person, but actually, can you step into being a confident person? And how can you do that? You know, from a mindset perspective, start thinking about all, I call it valuables list, you know, the reasons why you're valuable to your career or to your job or wherever it feels that you have lack of that confidence. And then you can start actually looking like, actually, yeah, I've got confidence because I've achieved all of this. I'm valuable for these reasons.
So building your confidence.
Yeah, exactly. And again, it's sort of, you know, yeah, peeling away those layers, but then also really looking at where you have those strengths and how you can do more of them to help yourself. So I was talking to a client yesterday and she was saying, you know, I need to get more confident in my teaching ability as a Pilates teacher. I said, well, how are you going to do that? She said, well, I need to teach more. And I was like, exactly. And then she said, oh, actually, I think if I taught teachers and asked for their feedback, that would help. Because, you know, at the moment, I'm nervous that a teacher's going to come into my class and they're going to know that I've only been teaching 6 months. I'm like, exactly. So do more of that, please. You know, your action for today is to email 3 teachers and ask them to come in and teach them and ask for their feedback. Because then you're opening a space versus them coming in, potentially criticizing your teaching. If you're inviting them in and saying, please critique me, it's on your terms, you're creating the space and you're getting the support that you need to be more confident as a teacher.
Yeah.
So it's just about that rewiring, you know, and creating space for things.
And as soon as you make that choice, right, I'm going to step into my confidence, right, what are the actions you can do to help you do that? Suddenly it opens up a whole new perspective that helps you see things and have ideas that you wouldn't have had because you weren't standing in that space yet.
Exactly. And the first question to ask is, what feels comfortable for me now? You know, if teaching a teacher does not feel comfortable, then could you teach some friends? Perhaps could teach a male versus a female, which would then step you even deeper into that confidence.
So gentle steps.
Yeah. What feels comfortable right now, and then what feels comfortable tomorrow? And then, you know, I remember when I did Stylist Live, and that for me was such a big deal, like speaking in front of all of these people.
Oh my God, yeah.
And I was like, well, I'm only going to get one chance at this. So, you know, but I'd prior to that, I'd spoken to 30 people and 50 people, you know, so it's like, I knew I could do it. Yeah. It was just stepping into that space. It's about creating space a lot of the time. So that things feel like they're on your terms versus being in situations where they don't, which can feel 2,000% more overwhelming.
It's, you're talking about space. There's something, I'm sure I took some notes about this actually. I'm sure you were talking about taking up space, or when you were younger, feeling like that you shouldn't take up space.
Yeah.
And so stepping into space and actually owning it and being in it. And I swear, reading your book last night then had such an impact. I'm now realizing, because you were sure you were talking about that probably early on in the book.
Mm.
And I suddenly had a situation where I was really angry and normally would sort of either not say something or sort of dial it down. And I just stood unapologetic in my anger, albeit in an email. I wasn't in a room, but communicated to a whole group of people. And just not holding back and being like, because, you know, the angry woman and the way she is judged. And I was I don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
You can think what you want. I have every right to be angry, and I'm going to express my anger, and I'm going to own it. And now it's making me think, it was like moments after reading, or like an hour after reading your book, where you were talking about taking up space and like owning that space. And so thanks. He's already having a transformational effect on me.
My pleasure.
The world has an angry woman in it who doesn't mind.
Yeah, being angry. I think, you know, really speaking our truth and being able to set those boundaries of what is and isn't acceptable that we, I think, particularly as women, find very difficult to do. It doesn't mean that you're being a nasty person, or you're just saying, hey, when you do this, the thing that I always teach clients is when you do this, I feel this way because. So you're not saying you do this and it may, you know, there's no pointing of a finger. You're explaining that it makes you feel this way and this is the reason why.
That's so good.
But equally, I think really standing in that space, and I talk about it in the book, how I was sort of the people pleaser.
That's it.
I was lots of different things to different people, and because I didn't really know who I was, or I was quite afraid of really showing sides of me that were perhaps vulnerable. Mm-hmm. So I was very much at everything's fine.
Mm.
You know, I can't remember how many times I'd say everything's fine, where underneath I was feeling not very fine.
Mm.
And I'm not saying you need to go around to telling everyone, you know, how you, you know, the issues that you've got of the day. But I think just addressing that it's okay, I'm not having a great time at the moment, but I'm okay and I'm working on it. And I think that vulnerability is something that we maybe shy away from a lot now. Women are standing so much more in their masculine. We're becoming CEOs. We can actually, you know, I don't think we can do it all, but we can have it all.
Mm-hmm.
But what it means is that we're standing so much in that masculine that it's sometimes when that we need to be vulnerable. That's a feminine part of us that actually, you know, we can kind of flow in that way. And I think learning to be vulnerable is certainly something that that it took me a while to get to, but now I feel quite proud when I'm vulnerable. I'm like, hey, I'm feeling some stuff here.
Yeah.
You know, versus sort of just pushing it down and saying, everything's fine.
Mm.
So, yeah.
And actually, Vicky and I have been exploring a lot this year already about, well, and previously this year, but about stepping into your feminine power, you know, and vulnerability being part of that. And, but also just being able to step into your power.
Yeah.
And step into that space.
Yeah.
Read some more stuff that I took so many notes. It's, oh my God, I can't keep saying how good this is. Which I'm very, I mean, as soon as I heard that you'd written a book on intuitive living, I did contact you. I was like, can we book you in to be on the podcast? Because this is your second time. You have been on here before.
I have, yeah.
And Vicky's gutted she's missing it again. But I knew it was going to be good, but I think it's even better than it's just so well written. I'm just,
Oh, thank
it's you. It's so, so good. Let's see. Oh, here we go. It's time to change the narrative, reclaim our mind-body connection, and rewrite our story based on our own journey and guided by our intuition. I mean, that to me is like, that is feminine power.
Yeah, completely.
That's real, like, and I don't know about you, but do you find in the sort of self-help wellness industry, I certainly sometimes get caught up in the idea, because, you know, I'm co-founder of Project Love, we're all about loving, that I'm supposed to be like this gentle, light, loving, never angry person all the time. And then I'm like, well, that
that is not who I am. I'm definitely fiery. And then recognizing, just kind of waking myself up from it, being like, that's not, no one's asking you to be that.
Yeah.
Do you feel like there is that going on though? There's a bit of a, sometimes the self-help thing, like anything, falls a bit into a bit of a funny space of what you're supposed to be, to be able to be someone who meditates every day or is loving.
Yeah,
or...
completely. And I think I've noticed it a few times when people have followed me for a while and then they meet me and they're like, oh, God, you're actually quite, you know, like I've got, I was going to say bolshy.
Feisty,
yeah, quite feisty.
Edgy.
But I think because I speak so much about connection to the self and it can come across in that way, but actually when you see me in the flesh, I'm like, no, kid, come on, you can do this. And there's different element to me. Mm. And I think, yeah, you're completely right. You know, we think we should be a certain way, but yeah, it's, you know, creating a powerful life. And this is what it comes back to, knowing who you are.
Yeah.
Being okay with that. You know, you might not be everyone's cup of tea, but that's okay too.
Yeah.
You know, I was saying to a friend yesterday, I was like, I've lost, well, since I went on 2 holidays in March, which I don't think my followers liked very much.
No.
Let's face it. I lost maybe 100 followers or something.
Because you went on holiday?
Yeah.
As in, you were showing pictures of holiday or you just didn't
people
post?
Dislike when I'm on holiday, clearly. But I've had my best month in business this month. So it's funny, isn't it, that you... I almost see it as kind of you filter, you know, that people filter out and that's okay. You know, sometimes I start unfollowing people if they just stop being relevant to me or,
yeah,
you know, and that's okay too. And I don't let it get to me. And my friend said, I thought you'd be the kind of person that would let it get to you. And I was like, no, because actually it's not ever about the numbers and I'm a certain person's, cup of tea, but you know, for other people, I'm a cup of dirty milk, so that's okay too, you know. And I think the world that we live in now, where everything's on social media, and I sort of am starting to think, actually, you know, I'm gonna put myself out there as who I am, and the more content that I've been putting out there, actually, the more I'm finding people are coming in as clients because I'm speaking to them.
Yeah,
speaking to them on a level that, you know, it's working for them. And it might turn a few people away, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Stand in your power.
Absolutely. And don't be afraid to be someone's dirty cup of milk.
Yeah. Fizzy.
I love that. Before recording, we were talking about body neutrality.
Yes.
And talk to us a bit about that, because I was really interested that you're more about body neutrality, you were saying, than body love, which really resonates with me, because I like this good old body of mine. And, you know, I definitely feel body neutral and we definitely feel like pals. But body love, like, I don't, adoring my body isn't something that I do, but I feel like I have a healthy relationship to it. So it's really interesting that you were talking about body neutrality, almost like being like, that's the goal. That's the place to be.
I put a little excerpt on it in the book, which is essentially saying that I think, and this is what I was explaining to you earlier, I think body positivity now has become a space which is very over-sexualized. Here's me in my pants. Look at me. I am so body positive because I'm putting a picture of myself in my birthday suit and a thong on social media. For a lot of my clients, body love, loving their body, feels so far away. So we start with acceptance. You know, what can you learn to accept about your body? And then we can move towards, you know, body love, if that's something. But what I'm trying to work on now is body neutrality, which is essentially, we don't need to talk about our bodies to accept, you know, bodies are bodies. They're neutral. I don't look at myself in the mirror and think something negative nor positive. It's just very neutral. And actually, if we can get to that space and we can stop talking about body so much, whether that's being positive or negative, that will probably have more impact than, so if we stop talking about it, it will have more impact, because then we make it something that's very neutral. Even when we're talking about body positivity, we're still stating that the body should be something. It should be positive. It should be.
Mm.
And when you take that layer away, then you're just, it's just a body.
Yeah.
You know? It's sort of in a way, because I've been thinking about this idea of love for a long time, and, you know, love, I think, if we call love an emotion, is probably the most challenging of emotions, isn't it, really? It's very complex. Mm-hmm. It's very challenging. So even to say, I love my body, this is so, it's a very
charged, very charged.
Yeah, it's very charged. So for me, do we just say, I'm neutral about my body, actually. It just is what it is.
Yeah.
And I've only recently, I think in having my daughter, I thought I'd be like, oh my God, isn't my body amazing? It's like, you know, actually I was just very, it is what it is. Particularly, I think, because it's changed so much since having her. So it's, I've really tapped into how I want to feel about it and how I do feel about it. It doesn't look the same. My boobs don't, definitely don't sit as high, but I don't feel negative nor positive about that.
Yeah.
In the fact that I'm, maybe I should feel like, oh my God, it's amazing because I fed my daughter for 9 months. Well, no, I don't. I just feel very, it is what it is, you know, take it or leave it. But again, it's sort of who are we getting naked for? Are we getting naked in, you know, for body positivity for ourselves or to put it out there to other people? I don't know whether me seeing somebody else's body makes me feel better about my own necessarily. So there's, I'm still exploring this, but my thought process was if we make it neutral, then we're not talking about them as much, therefore it becomes less of a thing to judge or compare against.
Yeah, it does remind me of when I was living in Brazil briefly many years ago now, like 15 years ago, God, almost 20. And I remember I would just, it just totally changed the way I just thought, maybe thought about bodies. Because I remember being on the beach and all size, shape, color of women were on the beach, all of them wearing teeny tiny bikinis, and all of the guys were like, it was, the guys were whistling at all the women, like regardless, and they were strutting around owning again, it. Owning it, didn't matter. And it was just like, so I think that there's something wonderful about all shapes and sizes being celebrated, but I do know what you mean when it's getting into almost just back into more obsession and objectification.
Yeah.
Just now of different size bodies.
Do we need to over-sexualize things to make them appealing and cool and off the moment?
That, yeah. You know, it's interesting actually, because it's when I really do love my body, it's when I'm having a massage. And when, particularly my legs, don't know why, but when the masseuse gets down to my legs, and I'm always like, oh, you, hello, legs.
Yeah.
Aren't you doing a good job of holding me up, walking me around? I feel a fondness.
Yeah.
I feel a fondness and a gratitude
when
someone's massaging me, because I'm really aware of like, God, those arms, like, wow, they're tight up there. That must be from all, you know, hunching over a computer and all this. And just feeling that gratitude and fondness, but not so much when I'm looking in the mirror. It's an interesting, why are we always having to connect through looking at our bodies rather than feeling
our bodies,
feeling them.
Yeah.
So again, if I'm, you know, putting cream on myself, massaging, I tend to feel more connection and fondness then.
Absolutely. It's
than when I'm objectifying it.
I ask my clients to do, right, okay, what can you do? Let's, we're not in front of the mirror here. How are you going to connect to your body? Actually just start, you know, massaging the cream in. Like, how does it feel to touch your body in that way? And, you know, what can you, what can you get out of that that's going to be different from, you know, for a lot of my clients, they can't even look in the mirror.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to, they don't want to see that.
And yeah.
That, I mean, it makes me feel very sad, but I also know that there is light at the end of their tunnel.
Yeah.
Because I've seen it.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. So you can. So where do you usually get clients to? So they come to you, they can't even look in the mirror. Where do you often get them to that place of body neutrality?
Yeah, really. And for a lot of them, it will be lots of restrictions with food, very up and down.
Yeah.
I don't eat here, but I eat lots here. And so I get them to a place where we find food neutrality.
Yeah.
There is neither good nor bad. and really feeling into what is going to work for them now. And it's there's so many layers to it as well. But I think when you can, you know, really honor your hunger, so many of them, my clients, will never really know whether they're hungry or full. You know, if you can't honor your fullness, you're not, you know, and you can't honor your hunger, you're sort of, you're eating for the sake of eating a lot of the time. And then you sort of, make peace with food, which is one of the principles of intuitive eating. So all foods are foods. And actually, if you take those labels away, what is it that you'd like to eat? So I do something called like the first bite test. You know, you're that first bite of something and you're like, that's absolutely delicious. But how does it taste to you by the end? And actually, was it as fulfilling towards the end as it was as the first bite? I get them to chew food, you know, at least 50 times.
I couldn't
for
do
a
that.
Meal
I literally
to get to know
it.
Like what food is.
I've tried that multiple biting. I don't just bite once and swallow, but close to it. I can't do it more than about 10 times. I've never been able to manage that. Wow.
Being mindful is you know, something else. A lot of them will be just sort of eating on the go consistently. And then, and eating is an experience. I talk about in the book, you know, vitamin A is awareness and vitamin P is pleasure. So I see this a lot with clients. Oh, God, that brownie looks good. No, I shouldn't have the brownie. It's bad. It's bad food. It's not healthy. I'm going to have an apple. And then, that wasn't very tasty. I'll go for a naked bar. I'll have the naked bar. They don't like that either. And then they maybe go through two or three different things. And eventually they just, you know, that's it. They go for the brownie. Had they have had the brownie in the first place, they probably would have had a couple of bites, felt really satisfied and got on with their day. And I was having a conversation with a client this last week. He has a lot of raw chocolate. And I was like, but does it satisfy you? She's like, I've never really thought about that. She's like, I eat so much of it. And I'm like, give yourself a dairy milk and just see. And I used to be exactly the same. I have dark chocolate because it's healthier. And now I'm like,
bags of it.
Yeah, it just didn't touch the sides. And I am a dairy milk button girl through and through. And you know what? I probably eat less chocolate than I've ever eaten since my road to recovery, because I've realized that it serves a purpose now and again. But because I give it to myself when I want it and I eat all the foods, I've just really found a peaceful place with it. I don't need chocolate to fill me up or make me feel good, or and that's sort of the point I want my clients to get to, that food is food. You know, and they really honor their hunger. Some days they'll have breakfast, lunch, dinner. Some days they'll just have lunch and a light meal. Other days they'll eat loads. You know, where are you in your cycle? All of these things are going to have an effect. If stress is your trigger, it's not food that we need to work on, it's stress. You know,
and
if
then
tiredness
how you
is your trigger,
stress.
We don't need to look at food, we need to look at the triggers. And that's really for me where the living stuff comes in, because I think when you feel fulfilled in your life, you just use food less as a coping mechanism or a tool.
I think they're so deeply linked. I remember a time when, it's a long time ago, but I was emotionally very unhappy. A lot of good things were happening in my life by then, but I was also emotionally very unhappy and really resented that we had to eat food every day. I resented food. And I, even at the time, I remember that, and I smoked at the time. And even at the time, I remember thinking, I have a suspicion that this resentment towards having to eat and the fact that also I smoke, that these two things are probably completely and deeply connected to my struggle, my emotional struggles at the moment, my struggle with life. Like if you're rejecting food, I feel like you're rejecting life. And so when you said about some people don't know if they're full or if they're hungry, and when you don't know that, I thought, you don't know where you are. And if you're not allowing yourself to enjoy pleasure through food like I once didn't, then how are you open to the pleasures of life?
Of life.
Like it goes hand. And I knew, even knew it at the time, but wasn't quite sure kind of how to get out of it. And now I'm both neither resentful of food, I love it, and I haven't smoked for a long time, and I do feel so happy and, you know, connected with life. And I just, Yeah, it's just, they just so deeply intertwined.
Yeah.
I think that's perhaps why so many people do struggle with food and
completely.
Eating.
I talk in the book about the inner child, and I don't go too deep because I needed this to be kind of a very approachable book for lots of different people. And I think it's funny when I work with people one-to-one and in the group program, and I mention inner child, the amount of women I see go, uh-oh, okay, yeah, this hit a spot, what's going on? And it's really about these imprints that are given to us, you know, normally sort of from, you know, seven, eight, nine into teenage years, where everything we see around us gets absorbed. Mm. So if you see your dad saying to your mum, oh, you need to lay off the cake, and your mum dieting, or you see your mum constantly on a diet and off a diet and on a diet and off a diet, and you know, these things have an impact on you.
Yeah.
And so you take on that story as your own, that, you know, I've got to be on a diet to be accepted in this world. Mm. And it has a huge impact.
And that's what women do.
Yeah.
Because if that's what you saw your mum doing, which of our generation, I think most of us did.
Yeah.
The low fat, that's what it is. But that's what part of being a woman is.
Yeah.
Is controlling, constantly restricting.
Yeah.
And you can't just have what you want. What madness is that?
Yeah.
You'll be enormous.
Exactly.
You know, and the being restrictive, I experienced it for a month in January. My partner was on a diet for health reasons, and so I was joining him just at home, bear in mind, outside I was not. But even so, just at home, that restriction on not being allowed to eat certain things, when first week, fine, second week, third, fourth week, I was really feeling the emotional impact of being restricted.
So you're overriding your
natural
biology.
Oh my God, it was awful. It was awful. I was like, sorry, babe. You're on your own.
Not for me.
It's not for me. I can't do it. But I was, and at the time we interviewed Harry Rose. I can't remember now if it was the start of this year. And we were talking about that, and she was talking about that restrictiveness, you know, and I was like,
there's so much research to show that when we restrict, it prompts us to create an obsession with said food, and which inevitably leads to overeating. If something is there all the time, it becomes normal, and then we don't desire it as much, you know, it doesn't become a thing. You can see that with everything. It's like if you listen to one song over and over again, you know, after a while you're like, oh, I hate that song. You know, you have to, I think, you know, we've taken the pleasure out of food and everything's become very complicated and very restrictive. And, you know, the paleo diet and this diet and what's the most confusing one? The York diet, I don't know. I've tried them all. If diets worked, then there would be the one diet and we'd lose the weight and it would come off and stay off and then that would be it, right? But it doesn't work like that, and everyone is different, and we have natural biological processes that need feeding and nurturing. And I think, you know, to restrict ourselves of one of the greatest pleasures in life, which is food, and just feel really sad. There's an amazing quote by that chef who died at the latter part of last year, and it was, you know, tell me what you eat and I will tell you who you are. And I really love that I think how you eat says a lot about you. You know, if you're restricting yourself, what does that say about how you respect yourself?
Yeah.
And, you know, so much so.
It feels like such a collective rising of women stepping into their power of this freedom around food.
Yeah.
Really, really amazing.
Yeah. I've worked with people in their 50s.
Yeah.
I've worked with people younger than that who have mothers who are in their 70s who are still restricting food.
Oh, yeah. My mum.
Yeah.
I mean, all the time.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I'm both my mum and dad. I'm like, guys, would you just eat just normally? Yeah, just
70
let yourself.
Years. 70
wow,
years of
I
thinking.
Know.
And for me.
Yes, I'm not eating bread this month. What? Well, you're like in your 70s.
Yeah.
Can't
Do you like
you,
bread?
Don't you think you can eat it now? Do you think it'll be all right?
Yeah. And I just, for me, it's all, I always think about the energy, the time and the energy that I used to spend thinking about what I was eating, you know, oh, well, I'm going out for dinner tonight. so I won't have lunch. I'd be starving. I'd get to dinner. You know, gosh, I've got so much better things to do with my time and energy. And I'm so pleased I've got to this point, which I suppose is why I wrote that book. You know, I want other people to have that aha moment of like, yeah, life's for living. I'm just going to eat what I want. And actually, you know, it's like me with pasta. I would not eat pasta. It made me fat. Pasta makes you fat, apparently. I eat pasta all the time now. I haven't gained any weight. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I just know when I'm full and then I stop and I really enjoy it. And it's what I fancy a couple of nights a week. And that's
it's
just,
not what it's you just eat, it's the food. Problem. Yeah. It's how you're eating.
Yeah. And you're not chewing your food and, you know, you're doing it when you're feeling very emotional and stressed and, you know, it's your stomach needs to, your whole digestive system needs to be in a state of like relaxation so that it can actually, you know, do its job.
Yeah. Do you help people with IBS?
Yeah.
Do you notice that IBS symptoms?
IBS is a very interesting one because people want to think it's specific foods, but it's not. And it's so triggered by stress.
Yeah,
and
I'm sure.
I think there was
anxiety.
I
was like at university, I'm sure I had IBS. It was from anxiety.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't diagnosed as IBS, but it essentially was.
Oh, the triggers will always be stress.
Yeah.
Dr. Mark Hyman said something in an email I saw recently that was like 96% of all conditions are caused or worsened by stress.
Yeah.
Like we're in this like stress epidemic. It's really serious. And stress is the trigger for, you know, one of the triggers for overeating or undereating, but it's also, you know, one of the triggers for so many other things outside of food.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not actually about, as I say, it's not about changing what you're eating. It's about changing your response to stress and lowering that stress level. And then it goes into like power of the mind, and actually, isn't stress just a mindset? I mean, it's who knows? You know, there's so much, so much deeper we could go, but yeah.
Oh, Pandora, thank you so much for the work that you do. And I really mean that. It's so amazing. It's wonderful to hear you talk about it.
Thank you.
And your book, I really, truly mean it. I think this should be a bedside table book for everyone, particularly for people who are listening to this and recognize that their eating is something that needs to be addressed. It's not making them happy, but for everyone, even if you're all right with eating and you're all right with your body, this is just, it's such a good reminder of how we can really live. And so thank you. And I'm very excited for it to be out in the world. Where should people go to buy it and where should people go to find out more about you?
Yes. So you can go to Amazon to buy the book. It's Intuitive Living by Pandora Paloma. You can find me at rootedliving_ on the gram, and rootedliving.co is my website.
Great.
Yes.
Just the .co.
.co. Yeah, I've shifted it a bit because I was Rooted London. Now it's Rooted Living. Because I didn't want to be tied to one city or thinking global. And actually my, so I do a 6-week intuitive eating and living group program and that will be launching in June. So for anyone who buys the book and thinks I want more of this, I'll be running that group program. It's 6 weeks, from June. So,
oh my God, that would be great as well. And then they get a piece of you.
Yeah.
Ah, oh, fantastic. Exactly. Pandora, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Listening to the Project Love podcast. We really hope you enjoy this episode. And if you did, then come and subscribe on iTunes and we'll deliver each new episode straight to your device. And we would love it if you would leave us a review to help us spread the love far and wide. And if you can't think of anything to write, then just tap 5 stars and say best podcast ever.